Abusers do not need to be, and rarely are, cackling maniacs. They just need to want something and not care how they get it.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast reading and reviewing some of the internet's most popular books. So as fellow busy people, you can decide if you want to read them or not. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are discussing In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. And this is a kind of quirkly, uniquely written memoir about basically abuse in a queer domestic relationship, which is definitely underrepresented in the world. And the author takes you through her story by comparing the dream house, which is what she kind of calls the setting where this abusive relationship takes place, and compares it to different like genres, fandoms, like writes about it from all these different perspectives with all these little references. It's very uniquely written memoir. I mean, you go from like really serious stuff to like a scene from Star Trek, and it's kind of poetry-esque, mostly second person point of view, and yeah, just really unique. But major trigger warning, as I said, this is about domestic abuse. Very rarely is it physical abuse, but I feel like this could be extremely triggering for people who have ever been in like an emotionally or mentally abusive relationship, and may point out times that you didn't know in your life your partner was doing something emotionally or mentally abusive, because it was really well written and pointed out some things I think most people are like, oh my God, yeah, didn't know that was doing that. So
yeah.
The
things we excuse as a society as not abusive that actually are very much so abusive.
Right. Yes.
That's actually one of the things I was going to say later. So I'm glad, Caitlin, you pointed it out. Is I bet a lot of people read this book and were actually like, wow, I think I was abused.
Yeah. And how you may be being gaslit by people you're not in a domestic relationship with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. There's a lot to discuss on this one. So, but trigger warnings out the deep end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, first things first, as always, do you guys have your reviews?
I do. And I like this review because I think it's funny, which is weird to say about this book. But a lot of the reviews were very long and very lengthy essays, which kind of makes sense because this is a memoir and it deals with a very difficult subject. So I could see where people would want to dissect portions of it. But this was not long one, and it's a 1-star review. Oh. And I think you'll catch why it's a 1-star review. You had really high expectations for this one. You've been looking forward to reading this book for a while now. You were completely taken aback by the mess that is the writing style. You thought it was just a matter of a few chapters and it'd be better. You were wrong. You are confused as to why this book, a freaking memoir, is written in second person. You DNF this book at 10%. You are now thinking of chicken ranch pizza.
Oh my God. Okay, that is funny.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and if you guys didn't catch it earlier, the entire memoir is second person. So it's
not
like
the entire, and there's an issue.
That
I
is true. But that
anyway,
is true.
We'll
but most of it is second person. So you is the predominant method of storytelling. Well, I love that, Catherine. I feel like I should go next because I also managed to find a funny one, which I was really proud of.
Guys, I did too.
Oh my God.
Wait. Okay, go, team. Okay. So this one is 4 stars and it says, yeah, so it did in fact hurt. I was like, yeah, it did in fact hurt.
Okay, I found like a serious one and a funny one, but I'm gonna go with the funny one because trend. 5-star review. Genius and amazing, as most books written by lesbians are.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Uh-huh. Okay, we did great. I was like really nervous about that because obviously this book is really serious.
A lot of the reviews like hurt my heart because they were people who were recovering from abusive relationships or realizing they may have been in one. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is painful.
Yeah. And also I was like flipping through some of the 1-star reviews and it actually like made me want to like sucker punch people in the face because there are people in the world that have literally like not one shred of empathy for others. And it was like triggering. but glad Catherine found a 1-star that was actually not the worst shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, no, to be fair, I sifted through a very many 1-star reviews to get to that one.
That's probably the only like PC 1-star out there.
Yes. All right. Well, as you've probably gleaned, this memoir is very unique. But most people at least came out the other side enjoying it. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.4 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.5 out of 5. Where did y'all come down?
I came down on a solid 4. I learned a lot from this book. I was never bored of this book. However, some of the little chapters, I was like, why is this here? It does towards the end for a couple different spots switch to first person, which I found really jarring after getting used to the second person. But overall, like a really good and unique memoir and a really unique and kind of, I don't want to say lighthearted, but like sort of a lighthearted way to tell a really tough story. So it was overall really good. It just didn't like the art form didn't perfectly connect with me as a reader.
Yeah, I had very similar opinions. I also gave it a very solid 4. If anyone follows my Goodreads, like 18% in, I posted the comment of, I don't know if I'm going to like this book because it took me a hot minute to get into it. And it took me a few days to read it, which granted, because of the subject matter, that kind of makes sense. But with the second person, and we've been reading a lot of like kind of sad, tragic books lately, it was a slog a bit to get through it. But once I got used to the writing style and got used to the storytelling, I was invested and I got through it pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree. I gave it 4 stars. I felt like this book did a really, really good job of explaining the headspace of like how an abusive relationship feels. And like, I personally like felt like the walls were closing in on me while I was reading the book. And I just like gave her so much props for that because I think that's so hard to do. And I agree with you guys. She did it in a way that it wasn't too heavy. Like, in this like weird way, she approaches the abuse with almost a sense of humor, which is definitely like a trauma response. But it like she wrote it in a way that it made the book better and everything was very intentional. The only thing that I didn't like about it was that I felt like the ending was a little bit rushed.
I had like questions.
Yeah, the writing style does take a minute to get used to, but overall, like, I'm so glad I read it because I learned so much. And I also just think it's a really beautiful and unique story.
It's like both she separates herself from her own abuse and both very much in it and very descriptive and very good at like the little moments. Mm-hmm. But like because of the second person, she can separate herself from it.
Yeah.
And so it's very weird because like it's both super graphic, descriptive and like talks about the small moments, but at the same time, very separated. Mm-hmm. So it's very unique and very well.
Yeah, I feel like it's a window into her personality. Like, I know this author now, just based on her writing style.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you learn so, because a lot of the book is references, like you, Caitlin, kind of explained in the beginning, where every chapter is sort of like framed differently. So it's like the dream house as comedy, the dream house as Star Trek. And so you also learn a lot just about what the author likes and like the media she consumes. And that also helps you like get to know her like in this weird way, because you just like spend a lot of time in her interests. And yeah. So, yeah, it's a very unique and interesting book.
I love the dream house in Doctor Who and that whole scene. I watched Doctor Who, so I knew all of those references. And I was like, as a person who hasn't watched Doctor Who, this must be so weird to read about.
Actually, I'm going to let my weird show, because there were three specific moments in this book that I was like, this is the weirdest micro detail ever that I connect with on a Midwestern level so freaking hard. And I highlighted them. Mm-hmm. So the first one is when she opens talking about rubbing the dandelion on her chin.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. My mother and grandmother taught me that. The second, it says, I wore a ring that said true love waits. Guys, I wore that for like a decade.
Yeah.
And then this is where it gets really weird. You are going to watch The Brave Little Toaster, a movie you haven't seen since childhood, but you remember loving and being terrified of. And I was like, oh my God. Literally my memories of this bizarre little movie we had on VHS. We'd like watch it if we wanted to be a little bit scared.
Oh my God.
I've never heard of that movie.
I haven't either.
You don't have the same childhood trauma to unpack then.
Okay, mine's right. Coraline. Coraline so, traumatized me.
Different Mine kinds of trauma. Different kinds of trauma.
Yeah.
But I was like, these are so niche, like core, like mm-hmm. memories that it unlocked for me. So then, like, I don't know, she has a way in with each person. Like you said, Doctor Who or whatever.
Yeah. No, I felt so connected to her, especially because she talks like the abuse took place while she was in her master's creative writing program. And I did creative writing as my emphasis in undergrad. So like, not that that's anything like getting a master's, but like a lot of the sorts of like classes and discussions and like roundtables and everything that she was talking about, I like did that stuff. And so I was just like, yeah, like there's something for everyone where you're just like really in it with her.
Let's get into our non-spoilery discussion, even though like there's not really a spoiler alert for this book. It's very much just what it is. Mm-hmm. But is this book more plot or character driven?
Okay, it is character, but this is one of the more plot driven memoirs I've ever read. Because mm-hmm. the whole time you're trying to figure out what happens in this abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, it's a memoir, so it's character driven.
Right. No, I totally agree. I was actually going to say, I think you can kind of make an argument for plot because, you know, she's not totally in control for like a lot of the book. And it's sort of about how she realizes that she's not in control and like that the things that she's out of control of are like wrong. And so in that way, it is very plot. And I agree, because you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop and you're always like waiting to figure out how the relationship ends. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that a memoir can truly not be character driven.
Yeah, I mean, it is character driven, but I 100% agree because of the like non-linear and linear at the same time of this mm-hmm. story. It could be plot driven because it's already happened mm-hmm. and she's retelling events that have already happened through a second person point of view. So there is an argument to be made for plot, but it is her own personal character in her own story. So mm-hmm. it is very much so a character driven book.
Yes. Have you read or would you read other books by the author? I want to flag this author has written a book called Her Body and Other Parties, which is like a very, very famous short story collection. So this is like her second, like very famous book.
Have you read it?
Me answering that is I have not read it, but I have bought it. So.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I mean, if that's her only other book, I'm not a huge short stories person, but I liked her writing style, so maybe I would consider it.
Only other book, but I honestly have no idea what her other books are like. I don't know anything about her other books.
Fair enough.
I'm looking at the other ones and I am very confused. But There's like maybe a series about the low, low woods. I don't really know. I have not read other books by the author, so.
I feel like Caitlin and I aren't very creative writing people, like nonfiction, like this kind of story normally. So I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking too soon for you, Caitlin, but I feel like I'm not one who's good read her other stories, but she's good. She's a good writer.
This is why they don't make sense to me. The Lola Woods is a DC Comics series she writes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. So what about the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I read this in one sitting, a couple hours. I did that intentionally, mm-hmm. but then because I am always skeptical of Casey's litfic choices or other choices.
She's traumatized us.
So I was like, I'm just going to get it done. But then I actually really enjoyed reading it in one sitting and wanted to finish it right then and there because I wanted to know how it resolved, how her story resolved, because there's like real stakes. It's a real person. So I had no issues with the pacing. It is kind of like you have to get used to the second person a mm-hmm. little bit and the kind of poetry-esque writing, but then once you're in it, I feel like you're in it.
Yeah. I technically took a week, so 7 days to read this book, but that is because there was a 5-day gap in between when I first started it and then actually dedicated time to it. Because like I said, the first 18% didn't really hook me. And so I was really concerned. Also, I feel like I have a negative opinion of Casey's picks. So I was automatically like turned off or had very low expectations.
The hate I endure.
Yeah, well, it's because you fucking made us read Bunny and a tender is the flesh. So, I mean, very fair.
Expand our world.
But I'm pleasantly surprised by Casey's choice this time. So, yeah, it just took me a minute to get into it. So technically 7 days, but I think the pacing's fine.
Yeah, I like the pacing. I feel like this book has really good rhythm, actually. Where, like, I feel like the author did put in a lot of effort to, like, I felt like it was obvious she put a lot of effort and thought into, like, how everything was spaced. And so I read it in 2 or 3 days. But I was similar to Caitlin, where I think I read most of it in one day, because it's like once you fall into that rhythm of the book, I feel like you kind of just want to knock it out, and you're like, at least I was like really pulled in. And so I like really, especially while the abuse is ongoing, I like really felt like I had to know what was going to happen, you know, because you're, again, there's that tension of like, when is the other shoe going to drop? Like, this is either going to blow up in a really horrific way, or like, you know, hopefully this person like is able to end the relationship without like anything else worse happening to her. And that was like really, I had to know.
Well, this kind of brings us to our busy girl rating. So what are y'all rating it?
TBH, I'm going to give it a 5. I think it was short. It was easy to read. And I really felt like I learned so much reading this book, like, because the author also talks a lot about like research and like case study into abusive relationships, and how specifically like abusive lesbian relationships have been treated and perceived. And so like, I think this book is like, you know, it's not an uplifting book necessarily. I mean, I don't think it's a huge downer despite the topic, but I feel like if you're going to read one thing, like this book will impact you a lot. And I think that makes it a 5 for me.
I am going to go with a 4 just because it is a tougher reading style. And I think this book is probably really hard for some people to read. I definitely don't think it's for everybody, but ultimately, like, a lot of the stuff you said, I agree with. I think it's worth the read if you want to take some time and hear this story and learn something really important. And I overall enjoyed it. So I'm going to go with a 4.
I'm going to go straight down the middle and give it a 4.5.
No, choose.
Yeah, we have never done that before, I don't think.
No, we have definitely done that before, you liar.
I don't know. I'm like inserting them right now in our little spreadsheet and...
Fine. I will give it the same as my quality rating, a 4. I
win.
I agree with Caitlin that because of how, like, you have to trigger warning it, I think that knocks it down, because I don't think people who are currently in abusive relationships or like have deeply experienced them and it's traumatized them, I think you need a little separation from that in order to read this book and enjoy it. I don't advocate for re-traumatizing people, but I think this
okay.
Is,
I'm not advocating for re-traumatizing people.
No, you're not. But I I feel like I can't give it a 5 for that reason of like I don't. It's not for everybody, so that makes it harder to give.
Understood
a 5.
For sure.
Yes, I do not think Casey wants to traumatize people. No. But yeah, so I'll give it a 4. But it's really short, and I think it has important like lessons to learn, and also like I hope it helps people understand what healthy relationships are and what more so what unhealthy relationships are, and hopefully that can help raise standards to have a better relationship with oneself and others.
Yes, and I feel like I also should say, and like now that it's like popped into my head, I actually really wish I had read this book when I was younger, because I think like abusive relationships aside, the author talks a lot about self-worth and like questioning, you know, what she was really looking for in relationships and like why she, you know, did accept certain treatment. You know, like part of her reflection is thinking about like what good love really feels like. And I think that's a really important lesson for everyone to learn and be thinking about. Because while I've never been in an abusive relationship, I have been in relationships where I don't feel I was treated super well. And I actually think this book like is very thought-provoking in a way that might help you realize that you're not with someone who's treating you that well.
Yeah. Because she specifically talks about like her body shaming and like how she felt in her own skin because she was on the heavier side is what she like describes. And I know a lot of girls, even if they aren't like, a lot of girls have body issues, and that's really unfortunate. And I feel like high schoolers, if they were to like high school teenage girls were to read this book, it would help them accept themselves a lot more, because I do agree that you need to have your own self-worth in order to be in a relationship with someone else. And if you don't, you're going to allow that person a lot more power over you, because you're allowing what they think of you more importance than what you think of yourself. And so I think I think it's super important to, and I think she touches on that a lot throughout the book, where there's like little moments where she's just like, but she told me like I was beautiful. She likes me the way I am. And like those love bombing moments were really impactful to her. And that's what made her stay a lot longer. And so I really hope that this, if someone reads this book and picks it up and takes this, take the note of like, you are beautiful. Like your body is your body, and you need to accept yourself first before entering into these kind of relationships.
Yep.
Well said.
Yeah. And now this is officially our spoiler alert section. Not much to spoil, but if you want to read it and you kind of don't want to fully know everything that happens in the novel, it's time to make your exit and come back later.
Can I kick us off by reading a quote I highlighted?
Yes, and I want to say I read your highlights, and so many of them were ones that I actually like underlined and like wrote down in my notes section, so like I was gonna call out your highlights anyway because I really liked them.
Wow. Okay, well sorry, the Brave Little Toaster one was in there. I don't think I made that one public, but the one that has stuck with me and is in my brain consistently since reading this She simply wrote, and I think this was like the whole chapter two of this one, most types of domestic abuse are completely legal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, mic drop. I hate this world.
Yeah. I think about that all the time as well. Like, it's not illegal to yell at someone and make them feel small and worthless, even though that's very abusive. And that's part of why I think this book, it would be so important to read just as like a relationship study for young people, is she explores the idea that just because what this person is doing to you isn't illegal, that doesn't mean what they're doing to you is right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure all, like, both of you have experienced this as well, like friends who have been in like emotionally or mentally abusive relationships, not in like the sense of like this kind of level, but I knew friends that were in relationships where they would, the other person would love bomb them, constantly want to be around them, where it was just like they felt isolated from their friends almost. And I don't know if the other person totally meant to do this or if they ever meant the harm of it, but there were moments where my friend, like, I would never see her without her boyfriend because he was so attached to her. And I call that out as abuse now, because it's like, you can't like allow her to be by herself with her friends. She can't go out because of fear of your insecurities about like her seeing other guys. And I think like how this book points out, like, hey, this isn't illegal, but it's very wrong and very abusive. And it took my friend like 3-ish years to get out of that relationship. And like, it's just crazy to me how we accept these sort of like love bombing abusive relationships, because they're like, oh my God, but they love you so much. And it's like, well, isn't it maybe too much?
Yeah. So in college, I took sociology of the family, and part of the class, like one of the, I forget what they're even called now, I've been out of school too long. One of the like parts of the class that was like a separate part, unit, there we go. One of the units of the class was specifically about abuse in families. And one of the things they talked about a lot is like how you start to like not do things because you're afraid of how that person will react. And so I thought about that constantly when I was reading this book, because I feel like the author also made that a big point about like, once you feel like you're avoiding even bringing things up because you feel like the person's reaction is going to be so scary and difficult that you can't even bring things up to them. You can't even like, you know, say a certain thing or talk about a certain person because the fallout and the fight is going to be so bad. Like, that is such a red flag. Like, you should not feel that way with your partner. And so, yeah, just along that lines of like, once you feel like, you know, you can't say something or ask for something from your partner because of how they're going to react, that is like, things have gone farther than they should probably.
Yep. And she gives you that in painful, excruciating detail.
Yeah. She does. Caitlin, I want to call out one of the other quotes you highlighted, because I also feel like it was one of my favorite quotes from the whole book. My God, I'm probably not even going to be able to find your Goodreads account now, because I feel like that's just my life.
Well, I only have two other public ones, and one of them Catherine has written down, so I'm going to guess it's the next one, so I can read it to you.
Yeah, will you read it?
You were suspicious of their feelings because you had no reason to love yourself. Not your body, not your mind. You rejected so much gentleness. What were you looking for?
Yeah, that line, you rejected so much gentleness. What were you looking for? I think about it all the time. Like, in your relationships, like, what are you looking for? Like, I think that's actually an important question to ask yourself and be like, how is this person actually affecting me? And like, because again, like, I've never been in an abusive relationship, and I actually like don't think anyone I've dated has really been a bad person, but that doesn't mean that I feel like they always treated me super well. And after those relationships, I also asked myself, like, what was I looking for? Like, why did I choose this person? Like, I voluntarily was with this person for a certain amount of time. And like, why did I not choose someone different? Like, why did I not choose to stay by myself? Like, I'm a person who likes to be by myself. So like, why didn't I choose that instead of like being with this person? And so, yeah, I think about that like all the time of like, you might choose something for yourself because you're not thinking fully, or you haven't addressed like the parts of yourself that like actually wants to punish yourself. Because
and I think the first part of the quote too, like, you can only accept as much love as you're willing to give yourself. So if you don't love yourself unconditionally, you're not going to look for someone who loves you unconditionally. You're only going to let someone love you as much as you know how to love yourself.
Right.
And it's really sad.
It is really sad. And I think another thing that I also thought about a lot, that was talked about a lot in my sociology course, was how much we actually romanticize domestic violence in our culture, and how we
Colleen Hoover,
we eroticize possessive, controlling jealousy. Like, think about the way movies frame men being jealous. Like, mm-hmm. it's acting as if that's care and that's love, and that's controlling your partner and not believing them or trusting them is not loving. But there's almost this like erotic connotation to like, oh, I want you so bad that like I can't have you out of my sight. When in actuality, like in real life, that sort of mentality is like deeply like troubling. It's not healthy.
Toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the crazy part is it's very gendered. So when a man does it, it is sexy and cute and possessive. But when a woman does it, it's a bitchy, like overly jealous person. So like, it is very, very highly gendered. So there's a huge power shift there that is totally wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think in just all cases, like if you are feeling jealous, and it's fine to feel jealous, but instead of acting on it, that's the time to dissect it and feel like, do I trust my partner? And if the answer is no, you should not be in that relationship, but you should be having these conversations with your partner in like a calm way of like, hey, like, I don't know why, but I'm feeling really jealous of this one other person, or like you being out, and then hopefully it can get you to a point of trust and respect. But if you don't have that, then like, it's not going to work ever. But it's crazy to me, yeah, like you said, how much we romanticize it. That's why I like freaking hate Colleen Hoover. Sorry, mm-hmm. Colleen Hoover stands. Like, I read one of her books, Verity, for this podcast, and the reason why I gave it such a low star rating is because of how much abuse was romanticized. And that is one of my biggest pet peeves, because I hate seeing my friends get hurt, and I would hate that this is telling young girls this is what you need to strive for. Mm-hmm. In a relationship, because no, a relationship needs to be equal, and it needs to be equal partnership, not this really fucking possessive and abusive relationship. And I hope that I'm seeing progress in the romance book section, like with an Emily Henry and Allie Hazelwood. Like, I'm seeing progress towards like showing loving and non-abusive relationships, but the fact that was going on for so long in romance literature is really troubling. So
think if you stop after book one of ACOTAR.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You gotta know that man is gaslighting her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's like a huge cultural association we have that actually looks at violence and control as passion, and normalizes those super high highs and super low lows, and like the difficulty and the fighting and the tension as being sexy, and that creating that sort of like sexual pull and romantic pull to a person. When again, in real life, if you have a relationship where you're screaming at each other, and you are so mad at each other that you are like screaming in each other's faces, and like that is what drives your like relationship and your tension together, that is horrible. Like, you should have like gentleness in your relationships, and that is part of why I love SJM, is because I feel like she does a really good job of depicting relationships that are
through book one.
I know. Well,
book one is the definition of toxic relationship.
Yeah, it is.
But the good news is she fixes it.
Just the point.
She does. It's the point.
Yeah, but how many people stop after the first one?
I know.
I hope not many.
Because to me, the lesson I learned from that is like, wow, look at how ready I was to accept so little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I was fully on board with this romance and it was actually so troubling. And if you go and like really think through like all of the parts of their relationship, you're like, wow, like I really settled for so fucking little. Why did I think that was romance?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because even in this book, at the beginning, their relationship seems so sweet and seems like passionate and like loving. And you slowly, I mean, okay. Yes, Caitlin, you're making a face.
Yes, I was skeptical when she was like, I'll settle for a throuple. I was like,
yeah, I mean, like I was deeply skeptical of the author probably should not have been in a relationship period. She needed to work through some trauma. But I think like at the beginning, I was willing to accept the relationship a bit because I was like, oh, they seem like they love each other and it's a good pair. But then like looking back on the beginning, there were red flags and there were moments where that person was being abusive that I just let slip because I was taught that that was okay.
Well, this person definitely had some undiagnosed mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Probably a severe mental illness would be my guess. And I think that the author alluded to that. She also kind of guessed that. But yeah, I think a lot of people sometimes excuse that behavior because their partner may be mentally ill too.
Mm-hmm.
And like, well, they can't help it. But they can get help and work on it. And you also don't have to stay with that person just because you feel bad they're dealing with something because you're dealing with something too.
Yeah. There's never an excuse for how you treat others. You can forgive that person, but you can't stay with them.
No.
But yeah, I feel like the author chose those moments at the beginning of the book for that express purpose because they did feel really romantic. And like in the traditional sense, I feel like we're taught to accept and think about relationships. They came across as romantic, but there were a lot of like subtleties and red flags in those scenes. And so I felt like that was why the author chose to focus on those moments is because if you look close enough, the signs are already there, but like we have normalized that behavior.
Yeah. And piggybacking off of like the mental health aspect of it, it wasn't just mental health because like, I think there was pretty some obvious either like schizophrenia or bipolar, like something because there was high highs and low lows.
Mm-hmm.
But also when she saw her parents interacting and you saw how abusive the dad was, it was cyclical in nature of like learned behavior. Mm-hmm. Like she learned that this was what a relationship was, even though she even says like, I hope I'm not like my dad, but she's obviously like her dad because that's
girl, you were worse than your dad.
Yeah. She's well, we don't know for sure because we only got that one snippet. But I think that's so interesting that like how your familial relationship and like how your parents interacted very much so is the basis for how you set a baseline for relationships of like that's what you strive for. And if it's the bar set super low, you're never going to get like to healthy levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, The scene setting in this book was incredibly important. Sort of a huge theme and like the inspiration for like the title of The Dream House is, you know, sort of that idea of like things can seem idyllic on the outside, but like most of these things happen behind closed doors when there's no one to witness what's happening. And so Catherine has pulled a quote here from a book. Places are never just places in a piece of writing. If they are, the author has failed. Setting is not inert. It is activated by point of view. And that was totally a huge thing because the house is almost like part of the story. Like it's not just because the dream house is like the theme of the chapters, but because like her sense of like isolation is so important to like the experience that the house becomes its own battlefield and like character. How did you guys feel about all that?
I loved it, but like we're world building girlies. So obviously we're going to be pro setting, and pro setting is character. I always love that in a book. I loved how idyllic it was described at the beginning. I've been to Bloomington, Indiana. I mean, it's Indiana, but you know, it's nice.
That's their slogan.
They had nice, what was it? Tibetan food.
The okayest place on earth.
The okayest place on earth.
Indiana, it's nice.
Yeah. But like Bloomington's like a little speck of dust on like a very farmy area. So I could totally see it being completely isolated. And like when she was just like, oh, it's isolated, it's pretty, it's idyllic, we're going to have this thruple and it's going to work really well. I immediately was like,
okay, but also it's on a college campus. So
yeah,
weird.
Yeah. Idyllic. Sure. Whatever. So I questioned that, but I thought that was interesting of like how the dream house shifted to this nightmare house in the end of it, of just like some place where she was isolated and trapped. Despite living far away from it, and having to commute to it on weekends. So yeah, I really liked it.
I also do like, I don't know, I just thought of this, like, I feel like a lot of time we pigeonhole these kind of out in the open queer relationships to coastal cities. And I really like that this took place in like Iowa and Indiana. Like, this happens everywhere to everyone. You can't just like stereotype it. Like, this is a very like unassuming Midwestern life, but it's still happening.
Right. I did really appreciate that because, and the author also talks about this a lot, how like women are not viewed as if they're capable of being villains. And I think that idea is actually part of what's shaped my taste in fiction and like why I love female villains so much, because I feel like women are really done the disservice of being painted very two-dimensionally, where you're just like angelic and soft and vulnerable and powerless. But like in reality, like every relationship has its own set of power dynamics. And the quote that we read at the very beginning is a great example of like the only thing it takes to become a villain is to want something and not care how you get it. And everyone is subject to that and subject to letting that rule their relationships. And it's, you know, women can do it to men and women can do it to women. Men can do it to men. Like, it's everyone can do it to everybody. But obviously the power dynamics of society have a huge influence on how it actually occurs in real life.
Yeah, because like fiction imitates real life, art imitates real life. So like in fiction, women were very two-dimensional because they were not seen as complex thinking humans, really. They were kind of just seen as housewives, trophy wives, or like nurses, maids, kind of like, you know, the helping people roles of society, where it's like they're there to be mothers, they're there to be nurses, they're there to be helping people. So how could they ever have an evil bone in their body? They couldn't have that complex of a thought, which is why you get a lot of like books where the women are either damsels or they are like, I don't know, catty, or just like kind of like very 1D, very like, if they're at all evil, they're like, there's no complexity to their evilness. It's very just so like, I'm a catty bitch kind of thing. So it's interesting because this is obviously not fiction. But in this case, because of how she describes the relationship, it's so important to understanding like the motivations behind the person, but also like she did love this person and this person wasn't evil. It was just that like she grew up like this and like, she wanted something out of the relationship and didn't care how she got it. And yeah, so I think it's interesting anytime that there's a complex female dynamic, especially like with queer literature, like that's super interesting. Cause yeah, like she says in the book multiple times, like women on women violence in those kind of relationships have been discarded from the court systems multiple times because no one can believe that.
Yeah.
Did you guys have like a favorite chapter or favorite like version of the dream house that stood out to you guys? I know, like, for example, I really liked the dream house as choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Because it was like, no matter the choice you make, it's the same freaking outcome. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very cleverly written.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my fave too.
I did really like that version. I wish I still had my hard copy because I feel like I did have a favorite and I can't remember it now. But I remember also really liking some of the discussion on gaslighting. And I think one of the gaslighting episodes that really stuck out to me was the Halloween one, where her partner makes a lot of choices and then blames her for them as if she's the one who did it and just like lies straight to her face about. And it's something that like starts off very small. Like you would think like it's just a Halloween costume. Like it seems almost like a normal couple's disagreement, like someone's in a bad mood and so they're not getting along, but it's part of this like huge repeat behavior of her like taking the blame for everything that happens in the relationship and like just like feeling that like in her in that moment feeling that sense of dread of getting home and like knowing what will happen once like no one else can see them has really stuck with me.
What triggered me asking that question is you were talking about like the people ignoring woman on woman violence. And there was the dream house as I think it was as a murder mystery. And mm-hmm. there's like a murder at the dinner party. And the woman like pulls the knife out of the body, wipes it up and walks away while everyone's still shouting at the men to figure out who killed the person. And I also thought that one was really interesting.
Yeah, that was
also
a great
scene. Yep. So another thing is that the book is mostly chronological, but not entirely chronological. There are time jumps where the author is like more so reflecting on the moment as opposed to just like presenting it like as if it is happening in real time. There are also chapters that are more like asides where she's sort of talking about research or talking about how domestic violence is often perceived because of how we see women in statistics, etc. What did you guys think about that structure?
It took a minute to get used to it because it's a linear, non-linear book. I was happy. There was one moment when I was writing this question that I specifically thought of. I was happy when she mentioned she has a wife and she has a loving relationship now. I'm mm-hmm. glad that nugget was included in because I was definitely worried about her post this relationship. So like, mm-hmm. I think that was like halfway through the book where she's just like, I'm laying next to my wife. She's telling me I'm beautiful and I feel it. And it was just kind of like, oh, thank God, breath of fresh air. Like, I'm glad you made it out of this and are in an actual stable, loving relationship. So I did like it in that sense. I mean, obviously the ending did feel rushed, but having at least knowledge of that helped me with the ending a bit more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I because we read fantasy books and they time jump like all over the frickin' place and point of view jump. This is easy to read.
Yeah, I'd say actually the scenes Caitlin mentioned where all of a sudden it's not in second person actually bothered me more than the time jumps. Because I feel like once you get into it, you kind of just accept the chaos, like the sort of chaotic storytelling is intentional. And so you kind of just accept it and roll with it as part of the vibe of like creating that feeling of like not having control. But again, like you said, I did feel at the ending that there could have been a little bit more reflection. It could have been wrapped up a little more. Probably the only spoiler we have, only true spoiler, she ends up marrying the woman who was supposed to be in a throuple with her. And they initially bond over being abused by the same person.
Yeah, that was wild. And those were the ones where she's talking about modern day where in writing the memoir that were in first person. I was like, whoa, hold on. But they were happy, so I didn't mind that they were interjected, you know?
Okay. I will say one thing because I totally forgot about this. I will say one of the reasons I liked the second person was because she says at the very beginning, or at least this is what I took from it at the very beginning, was that when you're in an abusive relationship, you split into two different versions of yourself. Like, you're the public version of yourself, which feels like you. And when she's in those moments, she refers to herself as me. Like, we're back in like regular first person. But when she's thinking about the abuse and like that version of herself, it's always you. Like, it doesn't feel like it really happened to her. Like, the separation is so extreme, and like the need to create that separation for her own mental safety. And I thought that was also just really interesting.
I think it's also in second person because it's pointing out when you're reading about you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw in some of these reviews where like people are like, oh my God, I was in an abusive relationship. So I think it's like mm-hmm. a way of putting you in the scenario so deeply that you feel it and maybe draw something out of your personal experience.
Yeah.
Realize some things.
That actually ultimately feels like you.
Right. Ultimately, like Catherine said, I didn't mind the time jumps. I think they were fine. A lot of times those confused me and upset me, but really it made sense in this, especially like jumping back and forth so that you saw her like Christian upbringing that kind of led her, like with her experience with her pastor that taught her how she was kind of being manipulated
yeah.
then, and like sort of things that helped you really connect with why she was not leaving this relationship and why mm-hmm. she was seeking what she was seeking. So yeah, I didn't mind the time jumps or the second person.
I did totally forget about that part in the book.
And I did really like the interjections with the statistics and things.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. I saw some reviews that hated the footnotes and hated the statistics.
Yeah, I didn't totally get the footnotes because I was reading it digitally, so confused. But
yeah, but
I kind of just ignored the footnotes.
Yeah, that's fair. But they didn't like the statistics part of it. And I'm like, well, you're reading a nonfiction book. Nonfiction tends to have at least some statistics. You should have known.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whole messages. You are not alone. And she backs it up with statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all a little nerdy. So statistics are our friend.
Right. I also want to say I did like and thought it was really interesting that she kind of says her motivation for writing it was partly just to put a queer narrative about abuse out into the world because they don't really exist. Like, there are, I'm sure, some depictions of like abusive lesbian relationships, but they're really not part of like our mainstream culture. Like, and she talks about even when she's researching, you know, abuse within the LGBTQ community, it was really hard to find anything. And so I thought that was really interesting, like to write it as a form of narrative that just to be like a record keeper that this is something that happens and I want to put this into the world just so like it's not as ignorable as it was.
Yeah. On that, like, it was so fascinating when she was saying like she felt that those kind of narratives were being silenced because there was this idea that it would be bad for the community mm-hmm. and they wanted to just paint like a very nice picture of lesbian relationships, and if there was any sort of like abusive narrative out there that could negatively impact the entire LGBTQ community, which mm-hmm. is wild to think about because that's creating a huge monolith of issues mm-hmm. to that community. So I really appreciated that perspective of like there's this pushback to not publish these stories because they don't want to be discriminated against mm-hmm. or put into like these are evil people kind of boxes, but it's just like people is people and people make mistakes and they can be abusive and they're complicated. So like, just because you're part of the LGBTQ community does not mean that you are immune to personhood and how people interact with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I found myself falling into that this week. My mother is a teacher and she was talking about, we ran into a little girl that used to be in her class or something. And she was like, Yeah, that's a little girl who has two moms, but it's like a bad situation at home. And I was like, oh, weird. Like, normally, like, same gendered parents have it all together, you know, like the perfect little happy couples. And I was like, that's exactly what I just read in this book. Like, stop assuming that just because someone is in a same sex relationship that they have their shit together. It's not true. They're people too.
Yeah. Well, moment of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I like that. I definitely think about it a lot. Because I think as a straight woman, it's also easy to really vilify men who, to be fair, are
deserve
much more often the abusers. But I think that it's also kind of healthy to just also accept that, like, romanticizing queer relationships is not appropriate and, like, does them a disservice for that same reason. Like, people is people, as you say, and, like, finding someone who loves and respects you is necessary and difficult for everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's applicable to some female friendships too.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
100%.
I have been gaslit by female friends before and didn't realize it. And like, I had a really messy like friend breakup in college where I was basically being emotionally abused by a friend, not to like this extent. Definitely, but like to where it took someone else calling it out and be like, girl, you know, you don't have to be friends with this person. And right. I was like, oh, you're right. And it was messy and people are messy.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I had definitely high school friends that were very mentally abusive towards me. And I stayed in those relationships way too long because I just wanted friends. And I was like, this is how girls interact with one another. This is what teenagers do. No. Yeah.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my little sisters has a close friend who is a little bit controlling. And I feel like this book totally changed my perception of like what was going on in their friendship. And like, honestly, I feel like I was a little dismissive of it before. And like, now that I've read this book, I'm like, you know, I really need to like self-reflect on why I didn't like take that more seriously. So it really changes your thoughts. It really changes your mind on some things.
Also, side note, her explanation for the origin of the word gaslighting. I was like, oh, shit.
Yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh. That was fascinating to me. I had no idea.
No.
Not a clue. Maybe you want to watch that movie.
No, yeah.
It didn't make me want to, but I was like, I got the gist.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else that you guys think we should talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I think each person is going to take away something different. And I think the more you sit with it, the more you learn because you're reflecting on it. I saw a lot of reviews that were like, hey, I'm going to immediately go read this again. Or I listened to an audio and now I'm going to go read it or vice versa. So I think man, woman, gay, straight. Read this book.
Yeah. Agree.
I will say I do recommend, I listened to it on audiobook. I do recommend it because it's read by the author and her cadence and her tone of voice is like beautiful. Like she should be a voice actor. It's actually insane how good she is.
All right. Well, I think that's everything. Do you guys have recommendations?
I've read nothing similar to this, but like, I feel like Know My Name is an obvious choice to talk about like narrative memoirs dealing with abuse. And we've talked about this book multiple times on this podcast, so I'm not going to go into it again, but Know My Name by Chanel Miller.
I second that, but also I think Counting the Cost, Jill Duggar's memoir, talks a lot about, it's definitely written differently, but how she kind of didn't realize how badly her parents were manipulating her and treating her. And you understand how she kept not realizing it because of how she tells her story. So I think that is a good one. if you like memoirs of people kind of realizing things are not the way they should be in their lives and overcoming that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm on Netflix because I'm looking up the title of something. Okay, I am going to recommend a TV series. It's a short TV series, and it's called The Program. And it is about the troubled teen industry. Mm-hmm. So all of these schools that are mostly run by the same parent company that have these really, really horribly, horrifically abusive schools that are like insane mental torture for children. That parents sort of unwittingly send their children to when they're having like really, or generally like really horrible, like disciplinary issues at home. Not really horrible, but they're having issues, you know, like parent to teenager relationships. I'm recommending that series because I feel like it is an excellent study in gaslighting and manipulation. And obviously also a very serious story about trauma and abuse. But one of the biggest things I took from the series was like how you can really like manipulate people and get people to believe what you want and like present an image to the world, because the children were being really horribly abused, but also their parents were being like really lied to and manipulated. And like the way that the school sort of has kept a hold on like both the students and the parents is really fascinating. Obviously very sad. So like a huge trigger warning on that recommendation. It is very serious, but the series itself is sort of about what was happening in the schools, and it's told from the perspective. The documentary filmmaker is a survivor of the schools. And it's sort of about their quest for justice, because they end up like finding a bunch of records left in like the old building of the school that they were at. So it's like for the first time in their lives, they actually have evidence of what happened to them. And so, yeah, highly recommend.
Okay, well, solid recommendations. I'm very intrigued by that show you just mentioned.
Yeah.
As usual, though, these are our opinions. You do not have to agree with them. We just hope you enjoyed joining a little discussion. This is, I think, an excellent discussion book if you were to do it for like a book club or something, of course, with all the trigger warnings in place. But yeah, let us know your thoughts at Busy Girls Pod on social media, busygirlspod@gmail.com. If you feel like there's another book like this you'd want to recommend to us, we're happy to take requests. We've done a few of them. So yeah, follow us, rate and review. And I think that's it. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.